Welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from a sunny and undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. This is where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. That's Mona Lisa Overdrive, in case you're wondering what that bumper music is. I like it. Thank you very much for the emails of late. Lots of good feedback for July's archives, and I really appreciate it. Listen, some of these archives are pretty large, 45, 50 megs, so they take a little while to download. Have patience. We could make them smaller files, but then they wouldn't be as good a quality. And, of course, you can always sign up for the BBS Radio Archives at X Squared Radio, x2-radio.com. Our AccuWindow forecast is 87 degrees and sunny. The solar wind is a blistering 510 kilometers per second, and there are 7 sunspot clusters on the surface of the sun today. A minor geomagnetic storm is in process as Earth enters a stream of solar wind flowing from a coronal hole on the sun. High-latitude sky watchers should be alert for auroras, those of you up there in British Columbia. New research by NASA's Meteoroid Environment Office shows that among all annual meteor showers, the Perseids are the number one source of fireballs. Keep in mind that the Perseids have just now started. They will last for a couple of weeks. The first Perseid fireballs of 2013 are just now arriving, so we do have some time. By the way, they're hitting the atmosphere at about 135,000 miles an hour. So explosions and, those ones that kind of split in two over your head could happen. Most people are seeing about 3 to 4 really good ones an hour. I have had some emails asking me about a report in the Washington Examiner, which states that a Carrington-class solar storm narrowly missed Earth 2 weeks ago. Nonsense. There was no Carrington-class solar storm 2 weeks ago. On the contrary, solar activity was low throughout the month of July. If you listen to this program, you would know that. So that report in the Washington Examiner is erroneous. The possibility of such a storm is, however, worth thinking about, because we are an electric society. A modern Carrington event would cause significant damage to our high-tech society. You wouldn't be able to text. I know some people wouldn't be able to survive without that. Earth is entering a broad stream of debris now, so it won't peak till about the 12th. But if you got a clear night, I suggest grabbing your favorite beverage and a friend and going out and watching anyway. By the way, tonight, about 9:20, we got a couple of passes from the International Space Station. So if you have some friends that haven't seen that, you can take them out. It will enter from the south first, and then about an hour and a half later, it will cross from the west. Pretty wild to see that thing go overhead. You don't realize how large that thing is in the sky. I was communicating with Diana West this week. You know that she wrote the absolute blockbuster book, American Betrayal. We had her on the program in June, and it was a fabulous interview. If you missed that archive, you need to go back and listen to it. I have a call out to her. She may come on this hour. She has another interview pending at at 9 p.m. Eastern, so she may not make it tonight. But I still want to cover a piece that out of the book that really is pertinent right now, because you need to know that this information's out there. Before I do that, I want to let you know that our phone lines are always open here at X Squared Radio. 888-429-5471, toll free anywhere in North America. 888-429-5471. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach me at 530-413-9537. And we have a rather large audience that likes to listen on the conference line. You can listen to the program, but you can't interact with the program, but you can listen to it on your cell phone, on your Bluetooth while you're out getting mauled. 805-399-1000, 805-399-1000. Put it in your speed dial, then put comma, comma, that's a couple of pauses, and then the passcode 769-608 pound, 769-608 pound. And then when you hit speed dial for X Squared Radio, it'll go right through, punch in the passcode for you, and bang, you're listening. If you can't remember all that and you have an Android phone, you can go to X Squared Radio at x2-radio.com and look for the Droid robot on the left-hand side. Click on it, and you can add it as an app to your phone. We have crafted that for you to make it easy. Now, there's a lot going on in the news, and we're trying to keep you aware of what's going on so you know how to position yourself, so you know how to keep yourself informed, to protect yourself and protect your family and your friends, and also maybe to position some of your assets so that you know that it won't be taken away from you. You know, it's not just the wealthy that know how to stand in the right place to catch the baseball as it comes over the wall. Diana West really has a tremendous amount of insight. You know, she's a columnist already, and she put together this tremendous book, and I'm going to read you this excerpt from her comments on it. And I want to open a discussion. If you have any thoughts about this, please give me a call and let's talk about it. You know that Japan attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. It is a day that still lives in infamy, just as FDR predicted in his famous speech. Well, according to Soviet intelligence reports, we now know that one of FDR's top officials, the Treasury Department's Harry Dexter White, was a Soviet agent who, among many other deceptions, subverted relations between the U.S. and Japan by inserting ultimatum language into the cable flow that actually spurred the Japanese attack. It pissed them off. This language was written in Moscow, passed to White by a Soviet handler in Washington, D.C., and dropped into a State Department communique that was sent to Japan. This brilliantly executed influence operation doesn't live in infamy, at least not yet, because you're just hearing about it tonight. You can read about it in Diana West's book, American Betrayal. And you can go back and listen to a fabulous three-hour interview that she had here on this program where she deftly describes a literal Soviet coup d'etat in Washington, D.C. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of Soviet agents were operating in Washington, D.C. in all kinds of agencies that were set up in 1933. Along with other shocking intelligence findings about American agents of the Kremlin, it hasn't been accepted into the general historical narrative. This weaving of the intelligence record into the historical narrative is the mechanism that propels this book, American Betrayal. It is fascinating. It is going to make a tremendous movie, and the screenplay is being worked on as we speak. Now, On December 8th, 1941, Japan attacked the Philippines, defended by General MacArthur and 151,000 U.S. and Filipino troops, a formidable force. This date doesn't live in infamy either. And for the next 7 months, however, until the last troops surrendered to Japan, Americans and Filipinos withstood deadly, punishing sieges as the record of loss and suffering at Corregidor, Bataan, and the Bataan Death March attests. 10,000 troops were killed at Bataan alone. Shockingly, these forces did not receive relief from the U.S. from the day of the attack to the day of surrender. How can that be, you say? How could that possibly be? Read the book. Because they also did not receive any assistance from our Soviet ally, which observed its neutrality treaty with Japan until one fateful land-grabbing week in August of 1945. A continuous stream of fighter and pursuit planes is traversing the Pacific, FDR cabled MacArthur in early 1942. One of the extravagant lies FDR told to the people and forces under Japanese siege, because no planes were on their way. Nothing was coming. But little wonder MacArthur ordered bulldozers to work around the clock to carve out four airstrips in the central Philippines and nine on the Mindanao in expectation. Truth, John Hersey later wrote, would come in mean little doses. Meanwhile, the heavy flow of arms and material to Britain and to the Soviet Union continued under Lend-Lease, the massive program engineered by the Roosevelt White House to supply America's allies, including, controversially, Stalin. He quotes, "I would go out and take the stuff off the shelves of the stores and pay them at any price necessary and put it in a truck and rush it to the boat," FDR said to Treasury Secretary Henry Morgenthau on March 11, 1942. "Nothing would be worse than to have the Russians collapse." Nothing? Really? Seriously? How about the collapse of those 151,000 American and Filipino troops who, at this touching moment of solitude in the Oval Office for the Red Army, had just begun their fourth month of unreinforced, unsupplied, death-defying resistance to Japanese assault? Is there something wrong with this picture? Something we have failed to notice over these years? Something that we are repeating again and again in places like Benghazi? For the first 24 hours after Japan attacked, U.S. military officials did reverse the flow of arms, aircraft, and ammunition heading for England and the USSR for reshipment to Hawaii and the Philippines. The patriotic reaction, the natural reaction. This, however, would be overruled from the top, as Lend-Lease historian George C. Herring has noted. Does that sound familiar? Do the words "stand down" sound familiar? Do the words "stay in Tripoli" sound familiar? Why? Why wasn't supplying U.S. forces fighting Japanese in the Philippines taking immediate precedent over supplying Soviet forces fighting Germans in the USSR? Was this decision not to relieve our men being pounded at Corregidor and Bataan the terrible but unavoidable price of a winning strategy, as Americans have been taught? Bull hockey. After all, the U.S. and Britain conspiring The U.S. was still neutral, by the way, before Pearl Harbor to combine forces to defeat Hitler, had settled on a Europe-first strategy to defeat the Axis powers. Nazi Germany first, then Imperial Japan. According to the hardened narrative, the Japanese attacks on Pearl Harbor and the Philippines changed nothing. Meanwhile, the same conventional wisdom has it, there were insufficient resources and too much risk involved in sending relief to MacArthur. Sound familiar? It's too risky to send reinforcements from Italy to Benghazi. It'll all be over by then. How did they know it would be over? How did they know that that assault would not last for 2 or 3 days? Why is it that the perpetrators of that murder in Benghazi are still walking the streets, having their morning coffee on the sidewalk in the sunshine, laughing and playing and reminiscing about their uncontested assault on the compound at Benghazi? Well, MacArthur didn't agree. 20 years after the event, MacArthur wrote in his memoir, reminisces that he believed the Navy had depreciated its own strength and might well have cut through to relieve our hard-pressed forces. The bulk of the Japanese Navy was headed south to seize Borneo, Malaya, and Indochina. American carriers have escaped destruction at Pearl Harbor that could have brought planes to the Philippines. The Navy fought the next 2 years and had great victories without any new ships, none. Meanwhile, the U.S. continued to sustain catastrophic losses while shipping lend-lease supplies to Stalin through the Nazi U-boat-infested North Atlantic. Could the decision to abandon U.S. forces to death or the horrors of Japanese POW camps by giving uninterrupted priority to the Red Army have anything to do with the influence of the scores of Soviet agents and assets within reach of the levers of power inside the U.S. government? How about the man driving military supply policy, the man behind Lend-Lease? That man was Harry Hopkins. And he was, without question, FDR's top wartime advisor. He was called the co-president. Hundreds of memos with HH on them have been found and have been directly tied to strategic military maneuvers, including the withdrawal from Italy when American forces had pounded their way through North Africa. We're sitting in Italy at the doorway to the soft underbelly of the Nazi regime. And then, to everybody's surprise, including the Germans, that entire force was ordered back on the ships, out the Mediterranean, out Spain, around to the north of France to invade the longest way possible, to slug their way through the heavily reinforced countryside toward Berlin, giving plenty of time for Russia, for Soviets, to take their occupation of half of Europe for the next 45 years. We have that situation again. We have another Harry Hopkins. We have agents, enemy agents, all over Washington. They're stacked 2 and 3 deep in every agency in the government, and they're making strategic decisions. Some of them you know. Huma, Valerie Jarrett. Well, as George Marshall would state in 1957 to his official biographer, Forrest Pogue, Hopkins' job with the president was to represent the Russian interests. My job was to represent the American interests. My question to you, fellow Earth explorers, are American interests represented in Washington, D.C.? Or are we again invaded by Soviet, former Soviet, and now Islamic agents? It's a great question. We should cover 888-429-5471. Is it happening before our very eyes again? Only this time we have history as our friend, as our advisor. Is there something we can do about it? 888-429-5471. My question is, when will Americans say enough is enough? CNN reports the CIA actually had dozens of operatives in Benghazi during the deadly September 11th attack last year. Yet, since the attack, the spy agency has allegedly engaged in an intimidation campaign of its own members to keep personnel quiet about the events of that night and why the CIA was in eastern Libya to begin with. Here's a quote from Representative Frank Wolf, Republican from Virginia. "We're getting calls from people who are close to people who were in Benghazi at the time that they were moving guns. So where are the guns?" By the way, Representative Frank Wolf is a subcommittee chairman of the Appropriations Committee, no small committee. He wonders what Ambassador Chris Stevens was actually doing in Benghazi on that night. Stevens and three others were killed over the course of the attacks. And if I just want to bring to your remembrance that Stevens wasn't killed outright, he was raped. This is a classic, classic Islamic act of humiliation. It is designed to humiliate you and to make you feel extreme pain. Now, one of my favorite listeners out there says the secret behind all these botched situations in war, U.S. soldiers make more money for the banking elites. The solution is to kill the Federal Reserve and never go to war again. Amen, brother. Absolutely right. All wars are banking wars. But were the Soviets really after the bank, or were they after Europe? Interesting perspective. Well, Wolf goes on to say, or ask, are they in a warehouse somewhere, these guns? Some people say they moved on to Turkey and then from Turkey to Syria. Actually, he probably heard that right here on X Squared Radio, because we broke that story that Ambassador Stevens was brokering rockets and grenades and missiles through Turkey to Al-Qaeda in Syria. Al-Qaeda is the rebels that are actually doing the bulk of the heavy fighting there in Syria. So I know, you're shaking your head just like I shook my head when I put the story together. Are you telling me that our administration, under the direction of somebody, maybe Iranian-born agent Valerie Jarrett, somebody gave orders that Ambassador Stevens was to broker the deal, and Ambassador Stevens didn't like what he heard? He didn't like that the missiles and rockets were going to Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is our enemy. Al-Qaeda is who we are fighting. Al-Qaeda is who has been killing our troops in Afghanistan, and we're sending them modern rockets and missiles and grenades? 2 hours later, they raped him to death, and no one stood in the way. Everyone was told to stand down. Nobody knows. So I think there are so many questions from the failure to respond to where the guns went, Representative Wolf stated. Wolf is currently attempting to create a select committee to investigate the Benghazi attack by launching a discharge petition from the committee. He needs 218 signatures to take the issue to a vote on the floor.
Well, guess what?
Senator Rand Paul first asked the then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton during a congressional hearing about her knowledge of any gun running coming out of the CIA annex in January. Clinton claimed she did not know anything about the issue and referred Paul to the CIA for such questions. Additionally, members of Congress's Super 8, consisting of both parties' leaders in both chambers, along with House and Senate Select Intelligence Committee chairs and ranking members, would have been required by law to have been briefed on such gun-running activity. But they were not. Five of the eight members have either said they knew nothing about any gun-running that was happening in Benghazi, or they claim the issue cannot be spoken about because it's classified. McClatchy News reported recently the similar response it received when asking about the issue regarding the U.S. government's role in arming Syrian rebels. Now, the rebels that you see on the news, you know, that are shot with cell phone cameras and little JVC shoulder cameras, where you see guys in Nike jogging suits holding an RPG or standing in the middle of the street like, you know, Sylvester Stallone with a 50 caliber machine gun rattling off rounds. That's just for the cameras. Those are not Al-Qaeda troops. Those are locals just holding on to a rocket or two. On January 24th, House Speaker John Boehner told talk radio host Laura Ingraham in regards to Paul's remarks on gun running, quote, "I'm somewhat familiar with the chatter about this and the fact that these arms were moving towards Turkey. But most of what I know about this came from a classified source, and I really can't elaborate on it," close quote. According to CNN, CIA employees have been subjected to frequent polygraph examinations every month since January of this year. These types of examinations, however, are routinely done every 3 to 4 years. Their frequency is being described as an intimidation tactic. Agency employees typically are polygraphed every 3 to 4 years, never more than that, says former CIA operative and CNN analyst Robert Baer. Nonsense. The reason they're being polygraphed is because they're being asked if they're speaking to any reporters. They're being asked, did you make any records? Have you sent any emails out? Have you made any phone calls from a pay phone? Have you sent a courier out with any information? Or is there a time bomb out there that we need to be worried about? Did you speak to anybody at X Squared Radio? You don't have to. If somebody's being polygraphed every month or every 2 months, it's called an issue polygraph. And that means that the polygraph division suspects something, or they're looking for something, or they're on a fishing expedition, and they can do that with CIA and employees as part of the job description. But it's absolutely not routine at all to be polygraphed monthly or bimonthly. CIA spokesman Dean Boyd asserted in a statement that the agency has been open with Congress. Bullshit. The CIA has worked closely with its oversight committees to provide them with an extraordinary amount of information related to the attack on U.S. facilities in Benghazi, the statement said. What a bunch of hooey. In the third part of his interview with Breitbart News on Obamacare, I was getting ready to change subjects here. I'm not done with this yet. I am not done with this yet. Back in June, I covered what I thought was my thoughts, my speculation on what went on in Benghazi. It's turning out to be exactly accurate. And by the way, it has now come to light. Most of you know this if you listen to not mainstream news, that everyone who was in Benghazi at the time, especially the ones who were injured and ended up in the hospital, they have all signed non-disclosure agreements. Yes, and the non-disclosure agreements are rather forceful. Like, they contain multi-million dollar fines if they speak to anybody, a reporter, a writer, a talk radio host, especially Congress. What went on in Benghazi is designed to die in Benghazi. Sooner or later, the CIA is going to figure out a word that they can link to this. That the instant that it's said, like a code word, the person making the claim, and I don't care if it's a president, a senator, a congressman, a governor, a policeman, or a CIA former operative, or an investigator, it doesn't matter. When this word is spoken, that source will be completely obfuscated, will be completely unreliable, and will be excoriated. Oh, you want an example? I have an example. During the assassination investigation of President John F. Kennedy, there were over 30,000 people that heard and some saw what went on in Dallas in 1963. Almost 30,000 of them swear that they heard shots ring out from more than one location. They were there. They were there live. It wasn't on TV to them. They have two ears. They could hear where bullets were coming from. The CIA had to work fast. They had to come up with a term that was so frightening, so disabling, that anybody who came up with a thought that there was more than one shooter would instantly be labeled a nutcase, like they'd seen Bigfoot or something. And the term was conspiracy theory. That's it. They just labeled him a conspiracy theorist. And that was it. They were done. They might as well have come talking about sea monsters or mermaids. No one was going to listen to them. And it was done again. It was done again. After the documents were discovered to be forgeries, missing, many, many abnormalities, missing records, missing testimonies, missing transcripts, forged documents, altered documents that had something to do with the legitimacy of Barack Hussein Obama to qualify to run for president. They went to work again. And they came up with a term that was so disabling and so libelous that anybody who mentioned anything like this, it didn't matter if they were a cop, an investigator, a reporter, a senator, or the wealthiest man in the United States. Once this term was affixed to them, they were laughed out of the room. And the term was birther. Now, it's been 11 months. We're now in August, after September 11th of last year. In approximately 1 week, it will be 11 months from the date of that attack. The CIA has yet to come up with a term. It's hard to do because this is complex. Now you have four murders. Now you have dozens of agents who are being polygraphed monthly. Now you have injured operatives, injured soldiers, injured agents who have now recovered, who have signed non-disclosure agreements. It's complex. Now you're dealing with over 20,000 missiles and rockets and grenades in the hands of our enemies. And we gave them that. We gave these rockets, grenades, and missiles, and guns, and ammunition, and chemicals to Al-Qaeda, our sworn enemy. Why? Because they were willing to attack Syria, a sovereign nation for thousands of years. They were willing to attack Syria and weaken them from within. Why? Because the leadership of Syria does not buckle to the Islamic Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood. They don't buckle to it. They are leading their country, for good or for ill. Now, when the Muslim Brotherhood puts together their protests and they start marching down the street, throwing rocks and bottles and breaking things and turning cars over and setting things on fire, and their troops, the police troops, say, you know what, we're not putting up with any of that. And they shoot them down in the streets. Now, is that good? No. We certainly wouldn't want to see that happen in our country. But what does CNN put on the news? Oh, how terrible the Syrian government is, and how somebody needs to go in and take Assad out. It could be none of our business. It could be something that we should not be doing. But even that, we should not be brokering stolen weapons from Libya through Turkey to Al-Qaeda. This is why we are hated. This is why we are attacked. I'm not a blame America first crowd. Believe me, I am not. But we're not making any friends doing this. We're not. We're making enemies. When we lie, when we murder, when we assassinate using drones or whatever, we're bringing upon ourselves a chess game that's going to end up in checkmate someday. We can stop 90%. They only need to succeed 10%. Well, anyway, Diana West is right on the money. And why is it important to learn about what went on from 1933 during the Soviet invasion of Washington, D.C., and the takeover? As you remember, in 1933, Roosevelt unboxed a set of agencies as though it was already planned out. You think he had committees get together and plan out this whole agency government? Nope. It was already designed, already in a box. And from 1933 to 2013, that's 80 years. 80 years of development of the agency government. We are now no longer governed. We are ruled. The United States inside America are ruled by the agency government. And now there are 37 states that have declared their sovereignty. Now, it's kind of a moot point. There's really legally nothing they can do. Oh, they can pick a fight, you know, sort of in public policy. But constitutionally, the only thing that they can do is to hold a constitutional convention, and they can amend the Constitution, and they can take the agency government apart. I began this segment with the wonderful work of Diana West, and in the middle of this segment, I said, when are Americans going to say enough is enough? When are we going to contact our governor and say, we want you to join with at least 37 other states, and we want you to have a constitutional convention, and we want you to take this agency government apart. We are suffering. Well over half the country is in poverty, and the agency government has succeeded in bringing the entire world, not just the United States, but the entire world to its knees. Now, part of this process of bringing business to its knees, of breaking everyone, not just the global corporations, they're kind of involved in it, but small business, medium business, that's who's being brought to their knees with their palms flat on the street and their mouths open at the curb. One of these efforts has been tried before. In 1917, it was used by the Weimar Republic to take control of the country. And now it's being done again. There are efforts to defund it. It's called Obamacare. Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, said that President Barack Obama, congressional Democrats, and the institutional left want to drag out the Obamacare fight as long as possible. Why do they want to do that? Because the Fed is working its magic. The Fed is printing money, $85 to $100 billion a month, printing it out of whole cloth. In fact, not even out of cloth or paper, just ones and zeros in a computer. Now, you don't see that. It's not hitting your bank account. No, 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 no. This is hitting the bond market way up the food chain. Now, if they force Republicans to keep waiting to rid the country of the law, Cruz thinks they will have hooked Americans on the subsidy to the point where it cannot ever be repealed. Come on. Once you taste free stuff, you can't give it back. You're hooked. And just as government handouts and welfare decimated the African-American family, this will decimate the rest of the American families. And once you take that piece apart, the nation will be snared. He goes on to say, it is why, hand in hand with delaying the employer mandate for big corporations, the Obama administration announced it wasn't going to enforce the eligibility requirements for the subsidies. Cruz continues, it is essentially encouraging liar loans, encouraging fraud for people who come forward and say, I qualify for a subsidy. And the Obama administration saying, we're not going to check on anything. We're just going to take your word for it and grant you the subsidy. Come on in. That's all Chicago-style politics, designed to buy as many votes as possible. We have already possibly seen the last free election in these United States on a federal level, because vote buying has become so prolific and the checkbook for doing so has become so large, no one can repay the bad checks. It's why the fight is now or never. Cruz added that if Republicans choose not to fight Obamacare this September, the left, Obama, and the Democrats win, and we lose. You know, anciently, if you go back and look at the scriptures, there were a couple of bands that used to do this. In the New Testament, it's called the Nicolaitan Band. And in other scriptures, it's called the Gadianton Robbers. They're worse than the mafia, much more murderous. And by the way, one of the initiation rites is exactly what happened to Ambassador Stevens. Many times, righteous peoples from age to age have had to take up arms and have had to rid their countries of these robbers. Now, they're not thieves. No, no, a thief comes from without your home. You can keep a thief out. You can lock the door. A robber is already in your house. It's harder to do because they're inside your space. They've already disarmed you. They already have the knife to your loved one's throat. Moving toward them as they smile and shake their hand and say it's the right thing to do is more difficult. He goes on to say, an awful lot of politicians in Washington, both Democrat and Republicans, are more focused on staying in power, on getting reelected, than they are in fighting for a principle. I think that's why there's such tremendous frustration among the American people with career politicians in both parties. And Cruz is exactly right. There's a reason why Congress routinely polls with 10, 12, 14% approval ratings. It's because politicians in both parties have been ignoring the American people that they're supposed to represent for a long, long time. I'll give you an example just to sum it up. Every poll that is done in this country, of Republicans, of Democrats, independents, whatever, underscores that the top priority for the American people is jobs. Jobs, 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 and the economy. It's restoring economic growth and getting people back to work. The rest will take care of itself. Even though more Americans want their lawmakers to focus on the economy, the freshman from Texas, Mr. Cruz, said Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Obama have done anything but since he came to Washington. And yet, in the 7 months that he's been in the Senate, he has spent virtually zero time talking about or being focused on jobs and the economy. Why? Because it's not a priority for Harry Reid or the president. Instead, they spent months on the president's agenda to take away our Second Amendment rights. We spent months on an agenda to grant amnesty to those who are here illegally. And we spent no time on tax reform, on regulatory reform, on restoring economic growth. They don't even know what it means to create jobs and to make it easier for people to achieve the American dream. Oh, they talk a good game. They even use words like small business and innovators and job creators, but they do nothing to help them. Cruz said the single biggest step Congress could take to restore economic growth, to help people get back to work, to expand opportunity for those struggling to climb the economic ladder, is to defund Obamacare. It should never have been a law in the first place. I know you had nothing to do with it, Mr. Cruz, but it should never have been a law in the first place. And the old bait and switch, making it a tax and giving the IRS the authority to administer it, was even more nefarious. What I'm saying is the best way to stimulate the economy is to let those that actually make the economy able to do their job. And the way to do that is to get government out of the way. How do you do that? Well, you could do it with one law, one single act. You could call it the Control-Alt-Delete Act. That's what we'll call it right here tonight. You know what that means? Control-Alt-Delete. If you have a computer, you know what that means. You press those three keys and the task manager comes up. And guess what you can do? You can reboot the entire system. You call it the Control-Alt-Delete Act and you go back to where the regulations were in 2005. Just take it back. 8 years, just take it back. The last term of Bush, just wipe it out. Take all the regulations back to where they were. Anything written after 2005 is in the trash. Okay? It's like playing electronic chess. You get into a situation where you know you're going to lose. If you make one more move, you're in checkmate. And you say to yourself, man, how in the world did I get here? Well, fortunately, you're playing a computer. So what can you do? You can go back a few moves. Just go back to where you were, to where you moved your knight out there and it got taken, to where you lost your queen. and try again. Take another strategy. Now we already know what doesn't work. We already know what it's like when the FDA works with Monsanto and approves GMO foods. We already know when the Secretary of the Treasury becomes corrupt and allows the uncontrolled printing of money, inflating the money supply. We already know what it's like when the Commerce Secretary allows banks to collude with one another and to set LIBOR rates amongst each other and to profit from it. We already know what happens when that's allowed. All you have to do is go back to 2005. Just reset the clock. And then pass a 10-year moratorium on any more regulations. Cars were safe enough. Drugs were safe enough. The environment was clean enough. Go back to 2005 and leave us alone for 10 years. Let us go to work. One of my favorite listeners, Alex, out in Missouri, says Michelle Obama actually says, quote, "The American dream is a thing of the past." Do you really believe that? If you believe it, go to another radio station. That's not what we believe here. We believe the American dream is alive. It's inside every one of us. It's innate. In fact, it's alive in every man, woman, and child on earth. And it is the rulers of their countries that prevent those dreams from becoming a reality. We used to be that way. We used to be able to dream big and chase that dream and build that thing. We used to be able to go to other planets and to the stars. We used to be able to cure disease. We don't do that anymore. We just treat disease. We used to be able to farm as much as we wanted and bring that product to market. Not anymore. We used to be able to make as much money as we wanted to make and then invest that money any way we wanted and allow that economy to drive things. We used to be able to innovate and to patent things and to protect our intellectual property. You can't do that anymore. All that's taken away. Everything belongs to government now. And that's got to stop. When? What time of day will Americans say enough is enough? There's a book out there. There's lots of books, but I'm going to push mine. Alienated Nation, The New Path to Liberty. It's available. You can buy it. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere where fine books are sold. You can buy it that way. I want you to do this. I want you to go to my website, alienatednation.com, and I want you to order the book. You get the audio version for free if you do that, and I'll send it to you autographed. But I want you to buy two copies. I want you to have one on your shelf ready to give to your friends after you finish reading it. And I want you to package up the other one, and I want you to send it to your governor. Maybe if the governor gets a few hundred copies of the book, he'll get the message. Because the solution is in that book. The Constitutional Convention, done the same way James Madison did it in 1787. It's in there. All they have to do is make a few simple changes to the Constitution, and they will dismantle the agency government. And when the agency government is dismantled, we the people will be represented in that government again. It can happen. We can do it. We can do it together. Simple, it's peaceful, it's constitutional, and we can make it happen together. AlienatedNation.com. Grab the link, send it out to your friends, and let's get that book in the right hands. Now, couple other things I want to say. I'll say it at the end of this and at the beginning of the next segment. There are two crowdfunding efforts out there I want you to know about. The first is at Indiegogo.com. That's Indiegogo.com. I want you to go there, put in the search term electric truck, and I want you to not only contribute $10 or whatever you can to that crowdfunding campaign, and there's some cool stuff in there. There's racing shirts, there's mouse pads, coffee mugs that make you part of the Vision Motor Cars team. But there's a widget there, obviously, at a crowdfunder, and you can grab that and you can stick it in your newsletter. You can put it on your website. You can send it out to your email database. That needs to go viral, because the next revolution in light delivery without fuel, without pollution, is right there. It's right there, and you can participate in it. Indiegogo.com. The other one, for you who are interested in the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, is at the crowdfunding site called fundanything.com. Fundanything.com. It's more geared toward films and documentaries and things like that, which is what this eventually is. You can go there and you can participate. All you have to do is put in the search term Hollow Earth and it'll pop right up. You'll enjoy it. There's some good videos, there's pictures and all kinds of write-ups that you can read there. And you can participate. And you'll be on the list. You'll be in the film credits. You'll be immortalized in film. Go be part of something. Go help us with those crowdfunding efforts. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Second hour is going to be awesome. Here we go. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We are coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. In just a few minutes, the International Space Station is going to fly over from the south. You might want to just step outside and have a look at it. And then about an hour and a half later, it's going to come over from the west. It's pretty fascinating to see if you haven't actually looked up and seen the International Space Station fly over. It's a lot bigger than you think. And tonight, it's about a minus point, 2.3, which means very bright, brighter than any star in the heavens, and no moon. So you should be able to see it really, really well. And you can keep your eye open for Perseids. It's only the 4th, and it's not going to peak till the 12th or 13th, but you might see 2 or 3 or 4 an hour. As we get closer to the 12th or 13th, I have seen the Perseids just be fantastic, 40, 50 nice meteorites an hour, especially if there's no moon. But it's going to be iffy on those days where you are in the country, whether you're going to be able to see that or not. Also, I wanted to let you know, if you didn't listen to the first hour, that Alienated Nation, The New Path to Liberty, the number one Amazon bestseller in two different categories, is a very, very important book. And the timing could not be more perfect for you to not only buy a copy and read for yourself, and if you buy it from the website at alienatednation.com, you'll get the audio version for free. So if you're not a good reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. But if you buy two copies, you can package one up and you can send it to your governor. Now, I guarantee if the governor gets 100 copies of this book, somebody on his staff is going to read this book. And they're going to say, "Governor, you realize we only have to get with 36 other governors and we can set this whole thing right. We could do it in a weekend without firing a shot. We can be represented in Washington again. It can be done." All right, lots of weird stuff going on right now. Did you know one day it was 90 degrees in Minneapolis, and the next day it was 3? Yes. An Arctic blast has gripped the Midwest and the Northeast, with a perilous combination of bitterly cold air and gusty winds. We're getting some of the winds down here in North Carolina as well, making it feel like winds 50 degrees below zero and enough snow and ice to cancel schools and make driving treacherous. Yeah, it's August. It's August. Last year, we broke like 3,000 heat records. This year, we're breaking cold records. In Washington, D.C., it was 15 degrees at Reagan National Airport on Wednesday morning. 15! The coldest it has been there in nearly 4 years, since March 3rd, 2009. The bitter conditions were expected to persist into the weekend in the Midwest through the eastern half of the U.S., said Sean Deviney, a National Weather Service meteorologist. In fact, he said, "I'm wearing a Snuggie under a top and another jacket over that," said Faye Whitbeck, president of the Chamber of Commerce in International Falls, Minnesota, a town near the Canadian border where the temperature was minus 30 Tuesday morning. Winds blasting across the Great Lakes over the past few days into Tuesday also resulted in up to 18 inches of snow dumped over some areas. It's absolutely remarkable. These temperatures haven't even come close. Oh, that's January. I'm looking at August here. 3 degrees is pretty darn cold for August. It just blows my mind. He says the reason that this is happening is because of the lack of polar ice. According to Francis and a growing body of other researchers, the Arctic ice loss adds heat to the ocean and atmosphere, which shifts the position of the jet stream. You remember the movie The Day After Tomorrow. The high-altitude river of air, we call it the atmospheric river, that steers storm systems and governs most weather in the northern hemisphere, This is what is affecting the jet stream and leading to the extreme weather we are seeing in mid-latitudes. It allows the cold air from the Arctic to plunge much further south. The pattern can be slow to change because the southern wave of the jet stream is getting bigger. It's now at near record positions, so whatever weather you have now is going to stick around. We're still seeing 90s down here in North Carolina, but definitely the northern states are seeing very, very cold mornings. With more solar energy going into the Arctic Ocean because of lost ice, there is reason to expect more extreme weather events. Now they're saying that the ice is refreezing up in the Arctic way sooner than it normally does. Just some strange stuff going on in the weather. All right, I want to do a gold update. I haven't done a gold update in a couple of months. Some people have asked me, you know, should I buy gold? Should I buy silver? The answer is yes. But early as April of this year, we really started seeing downward movements in both metals. And the most vociferous gold bears didn't even see this one coming. I mean, really, they thought, it'll go down to 1,600, maybe 1,500. Nobody predicted high 1,200s, low 1,300s, which is where it's at now. Gold just suffered what can be described as a panic. Now, it's interesting because normally gold is a hedge against inflation. And my goodness, are we suffering from inflation? Have you been to the grocery lately? Seriously, have you bought a can of Del Monte green beans lately? A can of Campbell's soup? A bag of noodles? Have you bought any of that stuff lately? Did you know that dehydrated mushrooms are up 400% over last year? What, you don't buy dehydrated mushrooms? Oh, you buy fresh mushrooms. Oh, well, they're expensive too. Some of this stuff, food inflation, is really catching people off guard. And gasoline is very unpredictable. We saw a 36-cent jump in a single day. In a single day in the month of July. That, we didn't hear any outrage. People were like, what the heck is going on here? One day I can fill up my tank for $35, and the next day it costs me $42. What's going on here? That's what I'm talking about. We are seeing inflation everywhere, and yet gold is dropping. What's going on? This metal plummeted so fast that its price surrendered a staggering 1/7 of its value in just 2 trading days. 2 days! This blistering decline was so extreme, it even dragged the general stock markets down with it, but they recovered. Shell-shocked gold investors are nervously wondering what to make of it. That was April. Now it's August. We're not seeing it come back. Silver's the same way. We saw silver drop down to below $20 an ounce. Yeah, good luck finding it. Just like trying to find gold at $1,319 an ounce. Go try to buy some. Yo, you can buy the bullion. You can buy the GLD. You can buy the certificates. But you can't buy the metal. You can't find it. That just blows me away. That you have no supply, you have high demand, and you have low prices. Well, the gold panic certainly caught me unaware. I mean, I thought it would go down, but I didn't think it would go down that low. Even after a dozen years of relentless study and very profitable trading of this secular gold bull, we were and are heavily deployed in dirt cheap gold stocks in light of gold's incredibly bullish technicals and sentiment. And that's the problem with panics. They're so extraordinarily rare that they can't be predicted. It's like a contagious disease. It just catches. 2008's crazy stock panic was the first true panic in over 101 years, actually since 1907. The last stock sell-off that even approached panic magnitude before that happened in late 1974. So these events are separated by several decades to a century, making them impossible to game. Not one in 100 sell-offs cascades into a panic. But gold's recent plunge was crash-like. But it couldn't have been a crash, because while panics cascade from lows after long declines, crashes erupt from record highs after long rallies. It's like profit-taking. Crashes, which are also ultra-rare, are only seen immediately after major multi-year bull runs, which we have not had. That certainly doesn't describe gold's weak downward price action over the past 6 months or so. Gold was already low and unloved leading into its incredibly improbable panic. On last Thursday's close, before the mayhem started, gold was already down 12.9%. And you know, it's up 17.6%. Now it's down 22.5%. Panics are ultra-extreme sentiment events that cascade out of lows when bearishness is already high. They are epic superstorms of fear that roar in and suddenly grip traders' hearts, driving outsized selling so crazy that it would be utterly impossible any other time. Gold plunged 4.7% last Friday and another 9.6% on Monday. The kind of universal fear and selling pressure necessary to trigger that is absolutely staggering. You have to see really, really large holders of gold dumping it. And guess what? That's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing guys like George Soros dumping their gold. Naturally, the sharpest gold sell-off of our lifetimes after the post-bubble crash in January of 1980 is going to wreak catastrophic technical damage. There's no way a 13.8% two-day plummet isn't going to leave a mark. Oh, it's going to leave a bruise, all right. Panics are extreme herd-like behavior. You know, something spooks a few buffalo out on the outer extreme, and then they start moving, and literally within seconds, the entire herd is moving. Nearly everyone succumbing to fear at once and frantically galloping for the hills. So I don't even know if these panics are explainable. Since, you know, what are you going to do? Stop, everyone, stop. Oh, that makes them run even harder. The lead into the gold panic starts way back in the summer of 2011, okay, in the summer. Fears of Washington actually defaulting on U.S. Treasuries in the last debt ceiling fight spawned a rare summer surge in gold. People were looking for a hedge, so they poured their money into gold. Well, that didn't happen. And, of course, you know, not being able to pay its bills was so much hype. And yes, it all got blamed on the Republicans, but it didn't cost them anything. They picked up two Senate seats, a little bit of oscillation in Congress, but nothing permanent. This time it's a little bit different. This time those that are in charge of the budget are trying to get everything paid for, everything funded, Social Security, the military, all the food stamp cards, everything is fully funded. They're just not going to fund Obamacare. Now, you're going to see it. Trust me, you're going to hear the propaganda. Every news organization already has their breeches full of ads and propaganda and commentators and people crying and all of this. They've already got it all loaded. It's already recorded and ready to go. As soon as the Democrats pull the trigger, the propaganda machine will begin. They're not going to do it too soon. You got to keep your powder dry as long as possible. Well, when is that date? I'm glad you asked that question. It is Labor Day, Nope. Not Labor Day this year. Labor Day next year. Seems like a long ways away, doesn't it? The end of August of 2014. But that's the perfect time to pull the trigger. Why? Well, because campaigns don't start until Labor Day. Oh, you hear about it. I mean, but as far as Congress and the Senate and all that, campaigns don't really start until Labor Day. You build your presence. You know, you get your news, you get your momentary exposures in the sun, some of the Sunday talk shows or late night cable shows or whatever. But the real campaigning, the real spending of the money doesn't start until Labor Day. I know, it's like the whites of their eyes, you're waiting. So what does it mean to pull the trigger? Well, you're probably not going to hear this anywhere else but right here on X Squared Radio. And when you hear it, I want you to tell a friend about it. I want you to send a friend to X Squared Radio to listen to this. What I'm about to tell you is the most brilliant political strategy in the history of political strategies. It will decimate the Republican Party. It will take them down at the knees unless you know about it in advance and see it coming. Are you ready? This is it. All you have to do is shut off the food stamp cards for 2 weeks. That's it. That's all you got to do. Threaten to shut down the government? Nobody really cares. Troops not eating, not getting their paychecks, Social Security checks not going out, not powerful. Not enough people to worry about. You shut those food stamp cards off for 2 weeks. And you'll have everyone, 47 to 50% of the nation, will be right in your hip pocket. They will do anything and everything you tell them to do. That's the secret. You got that little plastic snap card. All you have to do is turn it off. And you can do it with one keystroke. Turn it off, turn it on. And all the administration has to say is, with me, without me. With me, without me. With me, you eat. Without me, you don't. How easy can it be? And we walked right into it. When we watch where the eagles fly, we can usually tell where the carcass lies. Not so this time. The eagles are just flying. That's it. They're just flying. They're not flying in any general direction. I'm going to play this audio for you, and then I'm going to give you my analysis. Here we go. Listen to this.
The price of gold has fallen to more than a two-year low, under $1,400 an ounce, stirring fears that after years on the rise, the precious metal has entered a bear market. Well, Frankie and Martin have been looking at the charts. Frankie, first of all, this is one heck of a dramatic fall. I hear some analysts are even talking about panic.
It's a huge, huge move. I think it's taken a lot of people by surprise. You've seen that this morning when people come to their desk and just started selling because they're just completely sidetracked by this.
It's down about $100 already today.
Yeah, almost $100 today.
And the market's only been open a few hours in London. I mean, what is interesting here is this just global growth worries driving this, Martin, or is this a bigger issue?
Well, people can find all sorts of excuses for this. It's because US stimulus may be taken away, or it's because Cyprus is selling gold. But it's not. This is a straightforward panic. So we've seen not just gold fall, but silver actually fall even more sharply. And we've seen oil prices down and commodity currencies down, mining stocks down. So this is a real straightforward market panic.
I mean, does this have anything to do with that news earlier today that China basically did not grow in the first quarter at the rate people expected it to go, frankly?
Yeah, that's made it a lot worse. So that's just kind of soured sentiment even further.
I mean, what is interesting you're pointing out is that the Cyprus might be selling somebody's gold. But hey, when that story came out last week, everybody said, hey, how much gold the Cyprus have to sell. It can't possibly affect this.
Well,
market.
That's right. The only new thing today, as Frankie said, is that Chinese growth was slightly below expectations. But still, the Chinese economy in the first quarter of the year grew by something like 7.7% year on year, down slightly, but still a phenomenal growth rate. That's not enough to send these metal prices down.
But China still is the second largest consumer of gold, isn't it? So, I mean, it is fairly important in the greater scheme of things.
Yeah, it certainly moves the needle.
It does. It's certainly moving the needle today. So, I mean, is there any chance here that people are moving out of gold? What are they moving into, Martin? Is there any suggestion here? Or are people just, you know, moving out of these markets altogether?
I think it's too early to say where they're actually putting their money. We don't know because it's not in anything at the moment. There's no obvious movement in stocks or bonds or anything else. So we'll have to see where that money goes. But this is something that has really caught the gold bugs out. I mean, they were still talking about rising prices. There was no hint that this would come except for a Goldman Sachs sell recommendation last week.
So, Frankie, if this is really a bear market, how far could the price of gold fall?
But it's very hard to tell now. If you think about it, we're at 1920 at the peak in 2011, and we're at 1385 now, so all bets are really off.
Well, you know, it's all sorts of people are suffering because of this. Look at this poor chap in Pune in India with his $250,000 gold shirt. He's losing it minute by minute.
We've done the sums and we reckon he's probably lost something in the order of $10,000, even $15,000 since he bought the shirt.
Martin, Frankie, thank you both.
Well, there are three main things to listen closely to in this audio. The first one is that they said that China's growth was slightly off, not by much, but still 7.7%. Compared to the growth in the United States at barely 1.8%. I hate to tell you, but that's not growth. That's not growth. That's not even shuffling. You might as well be going backwards. 1.8% growth when inflation is about 3 to 4% means you're going backwards. Your economy is shrinking. We call that a recession. It's almost a borderline depression. How long now? Let's see. It's been from 2009, early 2009 until now, just over 4 years, almost 5 years, that we have been over 10% unemployment. Now, here in the Southeast, North Carolina, South Carolina, we're in the 12.5% unemployment. Eastern Kentucky, pretty close to 20% unemployment. And inside the major cities, many cities have lost 25, 30,000 jobs in the last couple of years. It's been devastating. Those sectors are not coming back. Detroit recently filed bankruptcy because the once profitable tax base that they had has disappeared. The price of real estate has fallen through the floor. Much of Detroit is vacant. They're turning off the streetlights because they can't afford to run the electricity for streets where no one lives. It looks like a war zone in downtown Detroit. It's really something to behold. And there are other cities following suit. Inside Atlanta, other cities are beginning to feel the same kind of crunch. Desperate, terrible drops in real estate prices. People are underwater. They're selling at a loss. The banks are taking big hits. And the bank doesn't want to go through what it went through in 2009, 2010 with all those houses, foreclosures hitting the market. Because the only people that can qualify to buy that real estate are the realtors themselves. And what the realtors are doing is they're buying properties for $50,000 and putting them right back on the market the very next day at $150,000, which is still below what their market price should be. So the only one really making the money are those that have the cash to invest in those properties. And that is the main thing to pay attention to in this piece. The main thing that they said, that they asked the question is, where's the money going? If everybody's selling off their gold, George Soros, Warren Buffett, if they're selling off their gold, where are they putting their money? Where is it beginning to show up? Which commodity is being bought? And the answer is none of them. When the richest men on earth are hoarding cash, and only cash. It's a sure sign that the crash is coming. Dozens of market-driving stocks are priced at hundreds of times their earnings. That means some naked short traders got caught in the margin call and have to buy billions of shares wherever they can find them. And money is no object. The only object is to meet that margin call and be able to return to trade another day. When the bleeding stops, and it will soon, either with the financial death of the trader or the meeting of the margin call, which is happening across the board, those stocks will return to their normal levels of about 10 to 15 times earnings. Can you say Tesla Motors? Yeah, Tesla at $135 a share on Friday was close to 150 times earnings. That sounds pretty insane, doesn't it? How does a stock get to that point? Well, it gets there. No, it doesn't get there because everybody thinks Tesla's the greatest thing since sliced bread and they're buying the stock wherever they can get it. It gets there because 40% of their shares that were on the market were naked shorted. It means the shares didn't exist. They were being sold by big houses like J.P. Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Fidelity, Mass Mutual. And what happens is they naked short sell and hope that the stock falls flat on its butt and the company goes out of business. They get to mark all those profits up to, you know, phantom profits, and they never have to claim them on their taxes. But if the price goes up, well, then they have to deliver the stock that they don't own. So they have to go buy it. That's called meeting the margin call. And when you can't find the stock, then the price begins to go up until you can find the stock. And that's what's going on right now. And the naked short traders are bleeding from their eyes. They are sweating spinal fluid trying to get that Tesla stock bought so that they can keep trading. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of fellas, I always say. But the truth is that those smart guys down at Tesla have sold treasury stock into the market. They have recapitalized their company. They have paid their government loans off 9 years early, much to the chagrin of Government Motors, because no sooner did they do it, less than 30 days, and a big article came out saying, General Motors perceives Tesla to be a big threat. Well, just replace the word general with government, and you get the picture. Government Motors perceives Tesla to be a big threat. And as you know or may know, Tesla is being sued in 11 states where they have salons operating as dealerships. They have a couple of cars there. You can go test drive them, fall in love with them, sit down at a computer, order yourself a car, and take delivery. Well, that's against franchise law in 11 states, and so those 11 states are suing Tesla, not the American Automobile Dealers Association, but the actual Department of Motor Vehicles inside those states is suing, and Tesla has already lost the first of 11 lawsuits. I predict that they will lose all 11, that those lawsuits will be appealed, and they will make their way to the Supreme Court, and they will lose again. Can't sell cars that way. You can't buck the system that way. You've got to figure out how to work within the National Automobile Dealers Association. Now, getting back to my thoughts about these eagles that are now flying, but they're not heading in any general direction. They're holding on to cash. Now, when those stocks return to 10 or 15 times earnings, and believe me, that's not the only thing that's going to return. Lots and lots of commercial buildings, from skyscrapers to factories to schools to all kinds of warehouses, railroads, utilities, all that is going to fall through the floor. And when that happens, those who are holding on to liquid assets, also known as cash, will be able to scoop entire market sectors for pennies on the dollar. Sound familiar? Well, the banks are crafting this in a masterful plan to quite possibly take over the entire world. With a staggering $648 trillion in derivatives. No, I didn't make a mistake. I don't have a decimal place off. That's exactly accurate. $648 trillion in derivatives out there, standing like a 10,000-foot-high house of cards. It will be a crash heard all the way to the center of the galaxy. And what can you do about it? Stay out of debt. Stay liquid. Invest in hard manufacturing and not in fluffy commodities. I'd recommend buying a little bit of silver and a little bit of gold, but make sure you get the metal. Don't buy the silly bullion paper. That's nonsense. Oh yeah, there's more. Just to bolster my case here that I'm making, that the mega bankers, not your local bankers, I'm talking the big bankers at the headwaters of everything, they're making plans. Today, there was an article that came out that keys into this perfectly. I mean, I couldn't have written it better if I wrote this screenplay myself. Sometimes this program is so dead on the money, it just amazes everybody on the staff. Syria has issued a legal limit on foreign currency use. Oh, and it comes with penalties too. Jail. They're threatening currency traders with jail. Syrian traders who price goods in foreign currency, like dollars, will face up to 10 years in a Syrian prison. The government announced on Sunday, that's today, August 4th. That's how fresh this news is. In a move aimed at stemming the increasing dollarization of economy crippled by 2 years of civil war. I want you to remember that word, dollarization, because that is the key word before every major war that has happened in this part of the world for the last 250 years. Oh, yeah. A decree issued by President Bashar al-Assad, quote, forbids the use of anything other than the Syrian pound as payment for any type of commercial transaction or cash settlement. Sounds pretty brutal, doesn't it? Sounds like China. Oh, I really didn't want to say that, but it's absolutely accurate. Traders who violate the law face up to 3 years in jail and a fine equivalent to double the value of the payment. If the sum involved is over $5,000, punishment could rise to 10 years with hard labor, according to the decree published by state media. Now, I can tell you, that's a dangerous threat because currency traders have perfectly manicured hands. They have no calluses. They have starched shirts. They have $200 loafers at the minimum. You know, you can always tell a sharp trader in New York or Wall Street or in Chicago. Don't look at the suit. That's easy peasy. Look at the shoes. Oh, yeah. You get up to a $400, $500, $600 pair of shoes, you're talking to a serious trader. But you know what? Those tootsies, those perfectly manicured nails, that brilliant, bleached white, bonded smile, it ain't used to hard labor. These guys haven't had a callus in half their life. They trade currencies. Well, bankers said Sunday's move reinforced existing prohibitions on pricing goods in dollars, a law which has been increasingly flouted after sharp falls and wild fluctuation in the Syrian pound, and said the penalties had been stiffened. Well, Earth Explorers, you can put just about any currency in there you want. You can put yuan in there. You can put yen in there. You can put euros in there. You can put Egyptian pounds in there. And oh, yes, you can put Iraqi dinars in there. Oh, yeah. I haven't given up on that yet. I have a piece on that I know you'll be interested in. It's to prevent people from fleeing to the dollar, said one Damascus banker, adding the decree would not have an impact on banking operations. Yeah, that's like saying everything's under control. Baghdad is under control. The Americans are a long ways away. Our defense systems are working perfectly. Famous last words spoken by Aziz as the tanks were rolling up behind him. It does not in any way affect the banking sector. The country needs foreign currency transfers, he said. The idea is that people don't all think in dollar terms as if there's no local currency. It's a more psychological move with the currency crumbling. This guy doesn't have a clue, or he is speaking the party line perfectly. Sharp falls and fluctuations in the Syrian pound have led to increasing use of the U.S. dollar in all walks of life, by food sellers, manufacturers, taxi drivers, importers. I can tell you from experience, if you travel in the Middle East, when you pull out the greenback, service improves dramatically. Oh, yeah, you can throw out a 100-pound note, Egyptian pounds, but you pull out $20. You pull out a $20 bill, and the red carpet comes out. Before protests against Assad's rule erupted in March of 2011, the pound stood at 47 to the dollar. That's not bad. After 2 years of war and economic collapse, it now changes hands for around 200 and briefly fell as low as 300 last month, exchange dealers say. Devastation to the commercial and industrial cities of Aleppo and Homs, together with the loss of foreign currency earnings as oil exports and tourism dried up. I wonder why the tourism dried up. You know, most tourists, not all, but most tourists don't like to have or rent a hotel room with bullet holes in a wall and a piece of cardboard or plywood over where the window used to be. Somehow, the smell of cordite in the city streets in the morning seems to turn the tourists away. It's hit the economy hard. Damages estimated in the tens of billions of dollars, and this year's wheat crop is expected to fall by half. The weakness and volatility of the local currency has pushed up inflation and left many shopkeepers struggling to price their goods in local currency. Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet. Having dollars, depositing them, and using them as currency of savings has never been outlawed. But even before the crisis, dealing with dollars in domestic commercial transactions was banned, said a chief currency dealer in a Damascus bank. This is a law that imposes more penalties, he said. Syrians can get transfers in dollars, and importers can still price their goods in dollars, but they can't put dollar price tags on the goods sold. Oh, yeah, there's always a way around it. Okay? Well, Reuters has an even more devastating article about this, and it doesn't just cover Syria. I wrote a chapter in the book, Alienated Nations, that I've just asked you to buy at the beginning of this hour. And the chapter is called Guess Who's Coming to Dinar. Okay? I'm talking about the Iraqi dinar, not the Kuwaiti dinar. We know what happened there. Just a really brief history. When Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, he stole billions of dollars worth of Kuwaiti dinar. Well, the Kuwaitis, once they were put back in control of their country, all they really had to do was to end the current Kuwaiti dinar and print a new Kuwaiti dinar. And then they just ask local Kuwaitis to go to the bank and exchange their old Kuwaiti dinars for the new Kuwaiti dinars. And they exchange them at about $3 to $3.50 per dinar. Now, those that saw that coming and were able to properly and legally invest in Kuwaiti dinars made a fortune. But it caught almost everybody unawares. All they really wanted to do was make sure that Saddam Hussein's currency was worthless paper, which they effectively did. But now the Iraqi dinar is a different thing, because nobody went in and stole billions, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of Iraqi dinar. That's not what happened at all. What happened was, once the Iraqi dinar was pulled off the market, in other words, all the Iraqi oil was priced in dollars, in greenbacks. And many people are saying that's what the war was about anyway, because they were trying to price Iraqi oil in gold. Well, can't have that happen. We got to have dollars be the main currency to back oil. And many people are saying that's why the war was fought in the first place, to maintain the banking control over the currency system. But the problem has been that since 1991, when the Iraqi invasion occurred, the Iraqi dinar has been off the global market. All transactions inside Iraq take place with Iraqi dinar. It's the only place that it can be used. But elsewhere in the world, hundreds of thousands of American investors, European investors, and even the U.S. Treasury has bought literally trillions of Iraqi dinar. Is the currency going to be destroyed? Is it going to be replaced? The answer is no. Get ready. Our world is about to undergo a total and complete metamorphosis. If you haven't heard this story before, you might want to just cinch up the seatbelt just a little bit and pay extra close attention, especially if you own Iraqi dinar or you have friends that have bought it from Wells Fargo or other sources. Despite what you see on the nightly news channels and mainstream newspaper headlines, the world we have grown accustomed to is going to be transformed from top to bottom. And it could be spectacular. It could be magnificent. In fact, our world has already been deep in the throes of change now more than any other period in recorded history of mankind. You know that. I know that. As many anxiously await a series of major events to unfold, most particularly the global currency reset to be implemented, we must always be mindful of the overall big picture. In assessing the big picture, we can truly appreciate the unprecedented amount of progress which has been made and continues to be made toward the liberation of the human race just within the last few weeks alone. It is truly astonishing to see. At this stage of the game, it is clear the mindset of the world has escalated into a very high state in order to prepare itself for an impending global event of the greatest magnitude. There clearly are many, many signs indicating a strong sense of urgency is stirring within numerous countries as a brilliant grand plan is coming more and more into focus with each passing day and in each passing hour. The grand plan we are witnessing now is nothing less than historic. Yes. Oh, it's historic. Now, many people think this is propaganda. I might be one of them. But the series of events that began on June 7th of this year, you don't know about them yet, but you're about to. These events are so powerful. These events are so well planned and so little covered by the press. I think everyone is going to be taken by surprise. And that might be a good surprise for some, and it might be a devastating surprise for others. Sorry. Needed a sip of my lovely orange juice on the rocks. All right. June 7th through the 9th. I'm going to give you a little quick calendar here. If you miss it, you can go back and listen to the archive. This is a very short time period in which one of the most powerful economic chess moves in history is about to take place. June 7th through June 9th, President Barack Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping met in Palm Springs, California, for negotiations on the Basel III Accords, the global currency reset, and the restoration of the republic. Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet. 20 days later, on June 27th, the United Nations Security Council voted 15-0 to lift the Chapter 7 sanctions against the country of Iraq after nearly 23 years of hardships on the Iraqi people. This is Iraq's biggest achievement since the ouster of Saddam Hussein a decade ago, allowing Baghdad to regain control over its own currency, oil, and the economy. The next day, 24 hours later, the Iraqi Stock Exchange is officially approved to become part of the NASDAQ system. The same day, an accountant employed at the Vatican Bank, Monsignor Nunzio Scarcano, is arrested and charged with smuggling large caches of money across international borders. You've seen his name. You've already seen his name. You've already seen his name in the news. I'm sorry, it's Scarano. 3 days later, on July 1st, two top officials at the Vatican Bank resigned amid a growing money laundering scandal. As rumors continue to swirl, Pope Francis may shut down the scandalous and criminal Vatican Bank entirely. The next day, July 2nd, the Federal Reserve Board votes 10-0 to adopt the new Basel III banking regulations. A week later, on July 9th, the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation, you know it as the FDIC, also votes to adopt the Basel III banking regulations. The same day, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, that's the OCC, agrees to adopt the Basel III provisions. Are you seeing a pattern here now? Because the very next day on July 10th, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew meets with the Chinese delegation to work out final details of the global currency reset. Today, Jack Lew was subpoenaed by the Congressional Committee for stonewalling. Probably it's going to end up as obstruction of an investigation into the IRS fraud. You see where this is going? July 11th, the next day, an updated version of the Glass-Steagall Act is reintroduced for vote in the U.S. Senate, led by Senators Elizabeth Warren, you know who she is, don't you, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Cherokee, and John McCain, which would require all the major too-big-to-fail banks to be completely overhauled and downsized. Can you say, spell it out with me, fascism? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Do you think this is going to pass? If you think the banks think this is a surprise, you have another thing coming. This is all part of the currency collapse. It is planned. July 15th, 4 days later, after this Glass-Steagall Act was reintroduced, the Iraqi Stock Exchange opens for international trading for approximately 2 hours. It was just a test, just to see if their system interfaces correctly with the NASDAQ. In order for the Iraqi Stock Exchange to conduct international trading, the logical next step is for Iraq to reevaluate their dinar in order to have an internationally recognized currency. So that was the 15th. The 18th of July, we're coming up now to just a couple of weeks ago, confirmed reports emanating out of the United Nations insist the reevaluation of the Iraqi dinar was announced within the UN itself by two foreign countries, one of which may have been the delegation from Iraq. 2 days later, Fox News briefly, very briefly, reports U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry offering confirmation of the adoption of the Basel III banking regulations. The next day, July 21st, numerous reports of banks across the U.S. and apparently some in the U.K. announcing to their customers various downtimes for system maintenance, including the international service known as SWIFT. That's the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications. I can validate this because on July 21st, I was involved in an international banking wire, and it was held up because there was SWIFT maintenance going on. The system was down. 2 days later, July 23rd, more rumblings come out of the UN as a growing chorus of impatience continues to swell amongst some of its member nations who openly question why the global currency reset has not been enacted yet. By any stretch of the imagination, the sheer number of astounding events listed above marks nothing less than a complete changing of the guard. These kinds of developments would not even happen if the old regime was still in charge. We simply have not seen this kind of significant activity on both a national and international scale ever, ever before. Whoever or whatever is in charge of this major banking move has the most important players on the planet meeting in strange places, Palm Springs, Iraq, back rooms in the UN, and making this deal. Now, the stage is also set for a return to the gold standard. What should we expect to see next? We have already told you about gold falling down to the low 1300s level. We've already heard the word panic as major, major investors and thousands of small investors have dumped gold right and left. Countries like Russia and China are scooping up gold as fast as they can buy it. One of the most important final steps most anticipated in some kind of acknowledgement that the United States has returned to the gold standard. Whether it comes in the form of a formal announcement remains to be seen. It has been nearly 41 years since President Richard M. Nixon removed the U.S. from the gold standard, setting the stage for hyperinflation of the dollar and the manufactured global financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. Make no mistake about it. The current worldwide financial crisis was totally engineered by the international bankers, the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, in collusion with George W. Bush, and with the last 4 years of Barack Hussein Obama. Instead of succeeding toward that objective, it has had just the opposite effect of mobilizing and waking up a worldwide resistance force which has stood tall to stop the New World Order dead in its tracks. It could be a faint within a faint within a faint. Nonetheless, the lingering question remains, why has the global currency reset not happened as of yet? Why has the Iraqi dinar not revaluated and allowed hundreds of thousands of private investors all around the world, many of them here in the United States, that have spent their life savings, their retirement money, everything on buying Iraqi dinar in hopes of this revaluation? There are tens of thousands of small businesses inside the United States waiting for the Iraqi dinar to revaluate. From New Jersey to Baja California, there are so many small businesses waiting for this revaluation, I can scarcely begin to list them. And the simple answer to that question is one word and one word only: security. We must realize how much hard work has been invested into this process by a wide assortment of people from a variety of entities. How much risk has been taken by moms and pops and retirees and small businesses that have invested in this DNR waiting for this revaluation. These entities come from across the spectrum, many of which have banded together and include the Chinese elders, the Chinese government, Russia, the BRICS Alliance, the United States Treasury, the U.S. military, U.S. Supreme Court, the World Court, the IMF, the World Bank, the Iraq government, a number of other foreign governments, and the numerous banks involved, among many others. After decades of slow but steady progress, no one who has worked so tirelessly on behalf of the people of Earth desires to see their hard efforts sabotaged at this late stage of the game. No one, that is, except the ever-shrinking, let's just call them the mega bankers. Apparently, the Chinese elders have insisted there be a total restoration of the Republic in the U.S. when the new asset-backed Basel III financial system is implemented. Well, the only way that's going to happen is to get rid of the agency government, because our Republic is done. We don't have a republic anymore. Our laws, our taxes, our fines, our regulations are all written and enforced by individuals that we don't elect. We don't even know who they are. We're not even represented in that government. So, one of my favorite listeners, Alex, says, our congressmen and senators need to be impeached too. They are responsible for letting this happen. Others have orchestrated things, but they did not protect their states or represent their people. Well, largely that's true, Alex, although I have to say that the Tea Party politicians really did their best. They came in and they turned things upside down. They really did. They came in with a pact made with the people that sent them there. And I'd say that most of them, if not all of them, especially the freshmen, are doing their job. When I go to Washington and I meet with senators and congressmen, most of them are really hardworking and they really want to get something done. But they also realize that there's something nefarious about Washington. I don't really know how to explain it. But when Nancy Pelosi walks into the room with her entourage, it's sort of like everybody's afraid of her. It's like everybody's afraid to voice their opinion. That these people that have been in Congress a long, long time, or have been in the Senate a long, long time, they don't just have power on the floor of their houses. They have power behind the scenes, in between the walls, underneath the carpet, in the drinking water, it seems. There's a great fear in Washington, D.C. Go visit it sometime. You know, yeah, go to the Smithsonian and check out the museums and go to the White House if you can, and go to Congress and just check it out. But you might want to do something else. You might want to take a couple of the government buildings. Go to the IRS building. Go to the Department of Energy and just see what a war footing they're on. Look at the barricades, look at the guards, look at the cameras, look at the systems that are in place, monitoring everything, recording everything. Very, very dangerous, dangerous place. And a lot of people, like my friend Alex is saying, the Fed is to blame. The Fed is a tool. The Fed is a tool used by the mega bankers and has been used that way since 1910. Now, it's going to be very difficult to tell the difference between propaganda and reality in the next 6 months. You have to understand what's at stake here. It's much more than politics. It's much more than the White House. We're talking about control of the world here. And there are a few banking families, the Rothschilds, you know, though that group, there are now Arabs that are involved in it. I'm talking about United Arab Emirates and Saudis and Chinese billionaires. They're involved as well. But keep in mind, Chinese billionaires are not everything that you think they are. I've met some. They can't get out of China. They can't send their kids to Disney World. They're prisoners in their own country. Why? Because the country's afraid that if the billionaire leaves, the billions will leave. And so they keep their wealthy inside the country. They keep them under control. They know where they travel. They know where they live. They cannot get out. It's not what you think it is. So many may also be wondering, why would all these global institutions be cooperating now to allow a new asset-backed economy system to be installed after having benefited so richly for the last several decades from the old corrupt debt-based system? I told you, $648 trillion in derivatives. You remember that poker game I was telling you about where all the wealthy guys are at the table and they're playing cards, and then pretty soon, after a little while, none of them can ante up, and they all look up from their green eye shades to hopefully see one big pile of chips at the table with the winner, and all the chips are gone? That's where we are right now. The answer to this question is twofold. Realize that this has been a long and drawn-out struggle, decades and decades and thousands of lives. They've been laid out. They've been spent. They've been assassinated. They've been murdered. They've been worked to death out through the legal route and by sheer force, which has backed the cabal into a very tight corner they can no longer remove themselves from. You see the Bilderbergs meeting in places, and you see the frustration on their faces as the most powerful people in the world meet and try to figure out how they're going to compensate, how they're going to regain control of the kingdom that is falling down around them. The Gaddi Anton robbers are losing their grip. Despite all their futile efforts, in addition, their source of funds used to finance all their dirty deeds has been systematically cut off one by one. Also, despite the nefarious reputations of many of these global institutions, most particularly the major banks, it is important not to paint them all with a broad brush. There are white knights or white hats strategically placed throughout every one of these establishments who are working in secret from the inside to turn them around. Several of them you have seen in the news lately have turned up dead, floating in the river, while still many others serving within the ranks of the cabal have been offered deals they simply cannot refuse. For instance, long jail sentences, bankruptcy, and or something far worse. How many suicides have we seen in the last 3 years? Extremely important people who have just slit their wrists or taken overdoses of drugs. We even saw the IMF chairman's or chairwoman's apartment raided by the French police as they were trying to discover the corruption, how deep and how far it goes. You've seen presidents of countries that have now been thrown out, jailed, and we've seen congressmen, we've seen senators, and we may even see a president before this is over. In other words, we have arrived at a checkmate time. Along with security, two other key words are clearly defining these times we are living in: transparency and disclosure. Does that mean anything to you? We haven't seen any disclosure at all. We don't know what's going on. Transparency? Forget about it. It's the most opaque leadership we've ever had. What we are now seeing is the same old nasty tricks which used to work so well in the old days, but no longer. We live in a digital age. You cannot hide this stuff. There's always a live microphone somewhere. And there are very smart people, very powerful people who see a way to knock this house of cards down. And as they wake up, they are saying, what I had started out this program tonight, enough is enough. And we can clearly see across the planet, from far and wide, people are waking up in droves. They are standing up to be counted through protests, demonstrations. Not all of them have been really clean. Occupy Wall Street, the Arab Spring. It's been messy, to be sure. But we've seen Greece, Brazil, Spain, alternative media, blogs, social networks, and on and on. And they are all shouting it out to anyone who can hear them. Have you seen all the train wrecks in the last 10 days? That's how goods are moved. Do you really think it's just silly train drivers talking on the phone? Do you think Spain and Canada and the U.S. and all these places, one train after another crashing? Do you really think there's no coincidence there? We've had enough of the corruption, the lies, and the greed, and the time has come to change the rules of the game. The new Basel III banking system is preparing the world for a totally transparent global economy built upon real, tangible assets. No more stashing trillions of ill-gotten gains away in some secret Swiss Vatican bank offshore, whatever. No more black budgets where other untold trillions are funneled down black holes to finance unending black operations. No more nuclear threats. No more war on terror. No more war on drugs. No more using warfare for global conquest. When the button for global currency reset is finally pushed, our world will never, ever be the same again. Trillions upon trillions of fraudulent debt will be instantly wiped off the books. Massive amounts of money will flow through the world global settlements to repay countries who have been robbed blind by the international banking cartel, including the U.S., and still more multiple billions will finally be made available to underwrite massive global humanitarian projects, to fund new and clean energy, to finally break the grip of the banks on the world. Once the parasites are fully removed from the system, which has been ongoing for over 100 years and has picked up momentum this year and last, we'll see the floodgates open to a bountiful number of changes. If you knew the amount of planning, preparation, and strategy which has gone into rescuing the world from a total takedown, it would boggle your mind. Anyone with a conscience and a heart can easily see the world is in trouble, big trouble. There are far too many people living in poverty and misery, and the world is drowning in a sea of debt. Everyone cannot be in debt. Everyone cannot be broke. But that's what we're seeing. It only takes a very small percentage of dedicated, passionate people to have a great effect upon the world. Remember, during the Revolutionary War and the American colonies in the late 1700s, only 3% of the population actually entered into conflict, and only 10% actively supported the 3%. Yet the outcome affected every single person in America and in the world for generations. And it became a global phenomenon, blazing in the hearts of those who longed for the ideals of freedom and liberty. Our founding fathers, who drafted the brilliant documents known as the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and finally the Constitution and the Amendments, were some of the most illustrious men who have ever lived, not only in this country, but anywhere in the world. And each and every one of them that signed that document, except for a few, were hunted down and destroyed by the banks. And their great work is about to be reborn yet again. It's time for the encore. Some of these men were just farmers, doctors, statesmen, yet they came together in an almost divinely inspired mission to lead their country out of the depths of bondage, to create a new nation which became a beacon of light to the world. Many paid with their lives, but their sacrifices were not in vain. They won't be in vain. The nation which they founded was the United States of America, a republic, not a democracy as the media and education system would have you believe. Since the War of 1812, also a banker's war, there has been an all-out assault on our country by the international banking cartel to steal the hard-fought freedoms and values established by the founding fathers. Every president, by the way, you remember Andrew Jackson, he campaigned on that fact, Jackson and no bank. And he was elected. The people were behind him. And the Rothschilds declared war on him and defeated him. It wasn't until they agreed to have the national bank that they withdrew. The British Crown never gave up their desire to rule over America, and eventually they succeeded by controlling the money supply through the City of London bankers, the Federal Reserve, in cahoots with the Vatican and numerous popes. Forget about all the phony baloney you've read about the history books. History is written by the winners, it's often been said. And all wars are about money and about banking. Nearly all political assassinations, Lincoln, JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King, were about the controlling the supply of money and maintaining absolute power. You have been told a pack of lies about your history. Now it's the time to begin to know the true heritage on planet Earth and its people. Soon you're going to learn about many brave men and women who have just put their lives on the line again to save the world from total annihilation, to bring us to the point of emancipation. You will learn about completely anonymous people who have worked tirelessly behind the scenes and have never received any kind of recognition whatsoever. We may talk about it right here on this radio program if we can. The time is coming, the beginning of a new world, one that's not run by the banks, one where value is placed in something solid and immovable. You need that because a fiat currency that's just created out of nothingness can be whatever they want it to be, will be whatever they want it to be. A constantly moving target, changing all the time, taking us off guard, reducing our value, making it impossible for us to put the pieces together and to plan for the future. Your 401k, your retirement plan, your pensions, everything is under assault. Let's take a quick break. We got about 40 minutes left. I'll open up the phone lines again, 888-429-5471. We'll be right back after this. Don't go away.
Pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to her kitchen chair. She broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew.
X-Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. You know, I am often in awe of the beautiful planet that we live on. I look up at the blue sky, or I look up at the stars at night, and I think about the cold blackness of space through which this little blue jewel circles around this main sequence sun on the edge of the Milky Way galaxy. I consider how rare she is. I recently saw the photograph of Earth from 900 million miles away. 900 million miles, and there she was, the perfect little blue dot in space, calmly reflecting the sun's rays back out into space, a beacon to any passers-by that we have liquid water on the surface of our planet, that we have an atmospheric river flowing overhead with billions of gallons of fresh water in it that rains down by a marvelous process of condensation to bring water to the crops, that we as stewards of this earth can plunge our hands and our machines into the ground, and we can place seeds there. And the nourishment of the earth and the air and the sunlight and the water will bring forth life that we can cultivate it and we can manage it. And letting nature do what nature does as it was set up by the designer or designers, it doesn't matter, whichever tradition you think. And through that wonderful process, life grows out of the dirt. And we can harvest that life and we can consume it and sustain ourselves. And that process of knowing, of realizing, not so much that we're at the mercy of the earth, but that we cannot build ourselves up where we can divorce ourselves from the earth. No more than we can divorce ourselves from God. We cannot. We cannot sustain ourselves without that. Because if we do, we're just fooling ourselves. We'll waste away. We need to realize that our being, not necessarily the physical body that's your biological transducer through which you interpret the universe and try to affect it, but the being inside, the animated being inside, the one that makes you who you are, that shapes your body into what it is you have done from lifetime to lifetime, whether it's in mortal form or other forms. No one who considers it for more than 2 seconds believes that you popped into existence when you were born on this world and that you will go back to dust and disappear forever when you die. You realize that you are an eternal being having a mortal experience. Every child knows this. But while you're having this mortal experience, it teaches the soul, it teaches the being within something very important. And that is that we rely on a food, that we live more or less hand to mouth, like the Israelites wandering in the desert who could not store up manna from one day to the next because it would rot. It was a story of how reliance upon the process of existence is necessary for the strength of the soul. Yes, it's quite possible that once you die, you don't have a physical body during that period that you're lying in the dirt. And maybe you don't have to eat. Maybe you don't have to think. Maybe there's no concept of time whatsoever. But while you're in this form, everything is compressed into 100 years or so, 120 years. All the pain, all the disease, all the love, all the ability to create life in your own image, the struggle of your process of growth from childhood to adolescence to maturity to growing old and then dying or dying before your time. The whole process, death and love and starvation and feasting are all part of the existence. Now, once you realize that, it puts into perspective the struggle, does it not? I mean, yes, I know there are those of you out there right now who are going to bed every night with your heart jumping out of your chest, wondering, how am I going to make this payment? How am I going to make that payment? I'm going to lose my car. I can't pay my doctor bills. My kids need this. I know that. Of course I know that. I raised 4 of my own and had 18 boys in a Boy Scout troop, only 4 of which had dads. I know what you're talking about. But once you understand that relationship, once you understand the process of the eternal being within your biological transducer, all of its pains and all of its pleasures rolled into one lifetime, you realize that none of that matters. Whether or not you can make your payments, whether or not you have a roof over your head, whether or not you own anything in your whole life, if you rent everything, you can have a full and rich existence on this planet. And it is a rare and wonderful experience. And I know this because the very best souls in the universe came here to live their life. In every generation, there's a handful that will change the world, for good or for ill. And what we're hoping, beyond hope right now, is that those that are alive now, those that would speak, that would love, that would resist, that would somehow put their power into the formula of humanity to change this world for the better, will stand up and not hunker down. Because I can tell you right now, and you already see this, that those that would destroy this world for everyone, pollute its air, soil its water, kill its babies, they're in power now. And they are shoveling our planet into their gas tanks and burning it. And they are murdering millions and millions of babies every single year. And they're making billions, trillions of dollars doing it. I'm at a loss of words even thinking about the word dollars and gold and wealth trying to run a planet like this. It doesn't need to be this way. I mean, yes, we need to have some kind of system of exchange so that, you know, people tilling the ground in Kazakhstan can sell a product to someone in Italy who can then convert it into, you know, something to be purchased or sold in New York. That kind of global economy is what is going to change the world. Not the balance of nuclear power, not giant ships of steel sailing around our seas with one barrel or another aimed at one country or another. When you look at how much we spend on national defense, that's about $1.3 trillion a year. About $1.3 trillion a year. It just boggles the mind, absolutely boggles the mind. Because we're defending ourselves against whom? And when we cut back that budget 10 or 15 or 18%, you think the world is coming to an end. And when you couple all the money that's spent by all the nations combined, the number absolutely boggles the mind. When we get this relationship understood, when we realize that we are eternal beings having a mortal experience and that nothing we accumulate in this life will go with us, there is no wealth that you can take with you. Only the relationships that you have with other souls on this planet will go with you. Those whom you call your children this time around may very well have been your parents the last time around. And I'm not saying you are reincarnated, but it's clear in the scriptures that you existed as an individual with intelligence before you came here. Some were ordained to be prophets. Some were ordained to be, you know, railroad workers. Some weren't ordained to be anything. They just chose to do whatever it is they want to do when they come here. It doesn't really matter what your tradition is with that, because I will tell you this. It'll all be made known to you when the time is right. It doesn't matter if the Hindus are right or the Buddhists are right or the Mormons are right or the Catholics are right. Okay, we know the Catholics aren't right. But I'm kidding. Everybody probably has a little bit of the truth. Or maybe more than some. Because if there was no truth in it, no one would follow it. But it's like a mirror. In the beginning, maybe it was whole and complete, and at some point it fell and shattered. Some people call it a falling away. And each leader, each tradition stepped in and picked up a shard of that broken mirror and said, oh, lo, here is truth, here is truth, here is truth. And yes, it's true. They all had some truth. They all had a truth that they built their tradition around. Speaking in tongues or prophesying or healing or being, you know, right with nature. All of those are good truths. Is it a total truth? Most assuredly not. If you left the record keeping up to the victors over the last 5,000 years, I am so surprised at what we have, what we call scripture, will keep us inspired and keep us together. But that ability to move energy from one soul to another soul is eternal, and it's undeniable. Oh, hey, we have a caller. Let's go ahead and bring Lynn on line one. I got about 5 minutes, maybe six I can give you. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Bruce. I mean, Brooks Hagner, sorry. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, you were talking about speaking up, and I keep seeing the situation on the planet for sort of during Roosevelt's time with the New Deal and the CCC establishment, but I see it now really clearly that we're supposed to integrate into every community these healing, multicultural for one thing, healing, teaching, and transformation centers where we can, you know, kind of counteract everything that is problematic on the planet from inside out via each community, get the kids on their sole purpose, start to network them, and start to recreate a whole new light force instead of armed force. Armed forces. You know, just, but the restructuring of the money, and Nasara is, and I'd like to ask too about that, is Nasara in compliance, or is that sort of a different term for this Basel III financial system? Or anyway, I know that the jobs, and the new focus.
I understand the Basel III system, but I don't really understand the Basel III system. But what I do see is that behind the scenes, in the UN and between the US and China, which are the two big economic players, these deals are being made, and they're being made by I would say non-bankers. They're being made by political leaders. In a way, that kind of worries me because I don't really understand it, and I don't really understand what kind of impact it's going to have. But in another way, I'm welcoming it because the system that has been in place since the 1700s, we already know that that kind of banking is enforced by assassination and war and starvation and sanctions. And that just has to come to an end.
Absolutely. But I totally agree. But I do realize that there's millions of light workers, healers, international groups, body, mind, spirit people in every community, even in remote parts of Montana when I was living on the Indian reservation. So it's like, why aren't we getting together in every community to counteract, you know, the vaccinations and big pharma and, you know, big pharma and the warring paradigm to go towards a whole new society of evolutionary consciousness with the integration of these multicultural healing, teaching, transformation centers instead of the jailing and you know, juvenile delinquency programs and, you know, on and on and on, the penal industrial complex, the military industrial complex, all the problems. You know, and go towards, there's enough of us now, you know, really in every community, awakened souls, to reestablish these community free education, not for armed forces and police forces, free education, teaching, training for transformation, healing arts everywhere instead of drug therapies. You know, we really need to get the new focus on these new jobs and services that are from dimensions of love and light. You know, an avatar training, too, for the universal travel that'll be coming.
Well, I understand what you're saying, although the words are very coined, and it's hard for non-light workers to understand what you're talking about. I get it. I understand. I see.
Yeah, so how do, that to the churches. Like, light workers are spiritual activists, so Christians and Muslims, they have the same commandments. Can we go after a bit of that, just like the constitutional amendments going through the, constitutional conventions and go through it, get them to unite and say, hey, you've got spiritual activists inside your church. They could be paid, too, to be of helping healing community services. They really are light workers.
Well, I think generally what we're talking about here is a natural rejection of the religious message. Now, we're talking about a spiritual message. That's a little bit different. That's more innate. Now we're talking about, inalienable rights, things that we understand down to our soul. But when we're talking about religions, we're talking about, the second greatest cause of war, since Adam.
But that's what I'm saying. Shouldn't they go back to their truths and their commandments to, the golden rule and to the spiritual elements that do talk about light and love and enlightenment, caring and sharing and compassion and forgiveness and,
Some religions don't talk about that. The Christian religion does not have very much love and light in it. It has a lot of punishment for not obeying what God tells you to do. And the Muslim religion is mostly about killing everybody that doesn't believe the way they believe. But there is a spiritual aspect to all these religions that I think most of the people hold to. That's what we're seeing happen in Egypt. That's what we're seeing happen in Iran. And a lot of people don't think about that. But the Iranian leadership does not hold the hearts of the Iranian people.
Mm-hmm. The Baha'is, which believe in a lot of different masters, at least seven, and their main kind of master over there is Abdul Baha in the Baha'i religion. However, they do, are open to all of them. And they're mostly, that's where it originated, was from Iran. And it's like the third largest, I think, in the world now, the Baha'i's faith. But, dogma, we have to go beyond all the dogma. But that's what I'm saying. If we could integrate it into the spiritual aspect of these spiritual activist jobs, plus all these other healing art forms instead of the drug therapies. And these are helping healing, caring services. And I know the Dalai Lama's latest book, is going around to Beyond Religion. And there is a massive consciousness evolution that's just reaching out. It's going into police departments and, through the Peace Alliance. And, we have the Youth Promise Act coming through. And there's just a lot of different Violence Against Women Act. There's just a lot of different angles to fit it into restructuring for these multicultural healing, teaching, transformation centers instead of the juvie halls, instead of the prison systems, instead of armed forces.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in incarceration as a method of rehabilitation. I am in favor of incarceration in the sense that about 95% of the crime is committed by the same people over and over and over again. So once you remove them from society, society becomes safer because those bad people are in jail. But if I look at the jail, I look at the system, I see a lot of people who should not be in jail. People that are in there for simple possession of narcotics or something like that, that's crazy. That's a crime against themselves. And, sooner or later, they're going to come to their senses or they're going to die. But to put them in jail, it's ridiculous.
Don't you think that in that respect that we should be able to get all the churches united in these new multicultural healing, teaching, and transformation centers? As far as Christians go, shouldn't they just be up front and say, hey, really the majority of the Christian are, we have God within us, and we're made in the image of God, and we have the power of Jesus in us. You could go, hey, these are Jesus jobs. What are you doing? We've got to get this new, I just see it, these new multicultural healing, teaching, and transformation centers for the youth created and communities, so that we can get things started quickly in a whole new thought form, and each person's, sole purpose. And we pledge allegiance to the flag, one nation under God.
to me, it doesn't sound like anything that's going to happen quickly. I think it can be inspired, and I certainly think it can be incorporated into the education system, but not everybody is a healer, and not everybody understands the whole idea of transformation. Everybody understands that Big Pharma is all about pumping treatments down your throat. I mean, you can't hardly watch a single television show without hearing an advertisement for some bone strengthener or some blood thinner or some, you know, fat-reducing drug or whatever. There's no cures for anything. It's just treatments.
Well, we all know we're getting there. So, again, there's these Healing Internationals with the virtual programming that could be in all of these centers. Even Deepak Chopra's coming out saying, hey, one of the first things you should do is check within and go online if you have symptoms or diagnosis of something and look up what is the natural healing for it. I mean, all the information is online or within each individual. And I'm just saying, isn't it time to get people refocused into, you know, the Soul Purpose Developmental Programs and how to go about that in a whole new health and human services, social service, civil services. So really everybody's working with and for individual communities, but locally and globally actually interacting too.
Well, I agree with you. We all do our part in our own way, and that's the ultimate goal, is to make people realize that the goal to life is not to stack your garage full of the most toys. It is to learn to live in harmony with one another and with the planet. And you'll have a wonderful life. And, you know, true, you may not be flying around in a G5 jet, but who needs to do that? You know, if the economy was
We'll have anti-gravity machines before too long anyway.
That's right. Gravity. I hate it. It's holding me down. Lynn, I really appreciate the call. Please, please call back another Sunday. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate what you're doing, too. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lynn. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
As we try to put things in perspective, as I go to the mall, I love to go to the movies. I just, it's not really an escape. I just like to feed the art. I like to see the creativity of Hollywood. And we get a lot of junk, but, a lot of times the movies are not advertised very well, and yet it's a really fine piece of work. If you look at Cloud Atlas or you look at, John Carter, really imaginative for their day, really reaching out there into the, you know, stretch the point of thought to realize how connected we are as human beings to one another, and actually all beings, whether they're human or not. That's really the goal. And it's not so much to give up the materialism, but to realize that materialism is part of the mortal experience. It isn't the whole mortal experience. We see, you know, monarchs that have risen to unbelievable power. The last couple of weeks, we've been all upside down talking about the new royal baby and that he's third in line to be king, and what are we going to name him and all that stuff. A royal is a fantasy because they're just ordinary human beings. And to see that much power and that much wealth centered among, you know, someone that really doesn't have any decision-making power anymore, it's a tradition more than it is a form of government. In this country, you know, we were formed as a republic, not so much a democracy. A democracy would be crazy anarchy all the time. As many, we're built as a country of immigrants. We have all kinds of different nationalities with all kinds of different banners and tribal flags that they run under. But we are a republic, which means that we elect representatives to go to Washington to take our story to Washington and be represented. And that's not what's happening right now. The elected government is not in control anymore. It hasn't been. The control started to be lost in 1933. As we began tonight's program talking about the Soviet invasion of Washington, D.C. in 1933, a de facto coup d'etat, when the very presidency itself was, had a hand up the backside working the jaw of FDR by Harry Hopkins. We have the same thing happening today. It's obvious that what is going on from the White House is a show. There's a lot more going on behind the scenes that we don't understand. And the agency government, those are the agencies, departments, bureaus, and administrations that write all the regulations, that force things down your throat, take things out of your home, take things out of your family, out of your schools, all that is being done by regulations which have the force of law. You don't have a representation in that government. That's not a republic. That representation doesn't exist. It hasn't existed for 80 years. As of this year, 80 years it has not existed. You can elect all the congressmen you want, all the senators you want, but you are seeing it every day on the news right now. Those congressmen are calling the agencies in to meet before them in front of the cameras. And you see what questions they answer. You see what documentations they turn in. They turn in pages that are completely black, no words on them at all. They sit there in front of the microphone and they say nothing. They use words like comprehensive, and they use words like, I've been answering questions for the last 7 hours. I don't want to answer any more questions. And they use things like, I, on the advice of my counsel, have decided to take the Fifth Amendment and not make a testimony at this time. That's our government? Yes, it is. That agency government that's sitting there in front of those microphones, whether you're talking about the IRS, whether you're talking about the State Department, whether you're talking about the Justice Department, whether you're talking about the Federal Trade Commission, you're talking about the Department of Commerce, you're talking about various bankers, they come in, they sit down in front of Congress, and they say nothing. Or worse, they just lie right there before Congress. Oh, you want to find me in contempt of Congress? Go ahead. I'm not going anywhere. I have my office, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you know what? They're exactly right. That's because our elected government, the congressmen, the senators, are not in control. That's why they have a 10 or 12% approval rating, because we send them to Washington and nothing happens. That's why they're not popular, because we send that representative up there and they slug away at a giant blubbery amoeba for 2 years and nothing moves. It just absorbs their words. It absorbs their punches. It absorbs their excoriations and their rants and raves and speeches. Nothing matters. And you have heard congressmen, you have heard senators. Listen to Senator Rand Paul. Listen to Senator Ted Cruz. Listen to what they're saying. And they will tell you, the agency government is out of control. They are not under control. They're not in control. Only one man controls them. It ain't a congressman. It's not a senator. It's the president. He and he alone controls the agency government, because he appoints the secretaries to those various agencies, departments, bureaus, and administrations. He appoints them. He chooses them. And he has the right to choose secretaries that believe the way he believes and follow his orders. And all of those regulations that have the effect of law, those taxes, those fines, those confiscations, those things that require you to jump over another hurdle, squeeze through another hole, jump through another hoop, stand on your right foot, say the right words, don't say the wrong words, all of that is under direction of the secretary. They're the ones that can say what firearms you can own. They're the ones who say whether you can have a 501c3 status or not. They're the ones who say you can bring an electric vehicle to market or not. They're the ones who say you can build this on your property. You can travel to that country. You can write these words. You can say these words, and on and on and on. And it has nothing, nothing to do with Congress, nothing to do with the Senate. All the elections in the world will not fix that. It is all run by the executive branch. And whoever runs that executive runs you, rules you. It has been that way since Roosevelt, and only one or two presidents have been able to buck the system. One of them is dead. Another one they tried to kill. A lot of people think that our current president is the perfect puppet. Maybe. Maybe not. One thing's for sure, he says the same words he's been saying for the last 5 years. You can go back, word for word. The speeches have not changed at all. Even the intonations is the same. He reads them right off the screen. And he does a good job at it. He's very charismatic when he does it. Of course, they're very careful who gets in the audience. One of the recent presentations, none of the Republican students were allowed to attend, only Democrat students, of course, to make sure the president was safe. We don't want any of those wascally Republicans causing trouble. I'm just telling you the shape that our republic is in. You have a chance to do something about it. All you have to do is go to the website, alienatednation.com, buy the book, Alienated Nation. You're going to get the audiobook for free. Of course, you're going to get the book autographed. I'm asking you to buy two and send one to your governor. We need those 37 governors, and there you'll see them in the book. We need 37 governors to receive 100 copies of that book. Why? Because if they receive 100 copies of that book from 100 different constituents in that state, they're going to read the book. It's a short book, and it has the method used by James Madison for the states to call a constitutional convention and turn this thing around, and it could be done in a weekend. It could be done in a weekend without firing a shot, and we will regain control over our own National Guard. We will regain control of our own banks. We will regain control over our own land and our own water and our own air. And you don't have to worry about Agenda 21. You don't have to worry about the agency government, because it will be taken apart. It will still be there, but it will not be run by the president. It will be run by Congress, the way it always was supposed to be. And when an agency member sits down in front of Congress, they will answer the questions. They will be held accountable. That's what you want. That's what you pay for. That's what we want. That is the original republic that was put together. And that's what we should do. I'm Brooks Agnew. I am so glad that you came here tonight and participated with me here at X Squared Radio, and we'll see you next week right here. Don't go away. We'll see you next week.